How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Welcome to SEO 101, your introductory course on search engine optimization. So, turn on your computers, open your minds, grab your mouse, and get ready to get back to the basics. SEO 101 on webmasterradio.fm is now in session.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on webmasterradio.fm, episode number 398. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my stand-in co-host is my company senior SEO, Scott Van Ack. How are you doing today, bud?
Good afternoon to you and everyone out in podcast world.
Yes. Yay. Another day, another week. So we are fitting this in a very busy day. So we're just going to jump right into it here. I know most of you appreciate that anyway. So to start with, just a sort of a side note, we didn't want to forget, it's in both Search Engine Roundtable and Search Engine Land, Google is slowly releasing a new mobile search design. And if you go to each of those sites, you'll see a side-by-side comparison, kind of hard for us to describe. It's not earth-shattering. I think Barry Schwartz even said that it's unlikely to release. He doesn't think it's going to have any great impact on conversions or anything. But it is fresher. It is simpler, a little cleaner. And I think for Google, just fresh is important. They like to make sure things don't get too stale.
For sure. I actually ran both of, Barry gave out two different examples, one for a search for humpback whale and the other for running spots in San Francisco. And for one search, I see the old version and the other search, I see the new version. So the rollout is pretty active right now, I would have to say.
Oh, cool. All right then. This next one, I read about this too. Why don't you take it on?
Yeah, so it looks like the Australian government wants to force Google to pay to link to news websites found in search results. In an Australian Senate hearing, a Google executive said that if a law forcing Google to pay news outlets for links could prompt it to stop offering search in the country, which is interesting. It's kind of interesting in a lot of ways. I can't see Google really pulling search. I think they're probably bluffing. They say, you know, Australia is a small market, 19 million people or something to that effect. But, you know, that's still a big enough number that they'll find a way to make it work, I feel like. But it brings me back to same with the thing they had going on in France, that why are people forcing Google to want to pay them to link to them? You know, like, hey, Google, you want to link to my site? Do it. You don't have to pay me. Just give me the link. That's more than enough.
Well, I think, I'm not sure. Okay, so what I understood, because I was mostly following the French deal, what little I was following it, but it was, you know, it was more concerned about what content was used in search, not so much just that they linked to sites. Because, I mean, if you link to a site and provide information, you're generally going to send traffic. And I don't think many of the news organizations have a problem with that. And so I find it a little muddled here. See the French deal, just reading here, I noticed something that it was saying. It's more about subsidizing journalism. So I think, I mean, obviously these sites would love to be found, but I think in a lot of cases they're putting snippets in search and they're using that content and sometimes not sending that traffic. I think that's the biggest offense. And I guess the only way to nip that in the butt, perhaps from a legal point of view, is to say links. I wonder.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that myself because I kind of get the snippet aspect to a degree because, you know, you show their snippet, people never go through to your site. Although even as a website owner, you'd still get a level of branding there that's, you know, pretty valuable. But that aside, this one particular article from Barry states link. Yeah, not snippet, uh-huh. Which had me wondering, because if it's just a link, why would anybody have a problem with that on any level? I mean, that's gold. But uh-huh. I don't know if Barry misread. I haven't really been researching a lot about the Australian issues.
Well, this
going
is
on
actually
there,
so. A quote from Google Australia's managing director, which mentions links too. So I wonder if it's just the way they have to tackle it. I don't know. It's very verbose, I'm sure, and it's going to cause lots of issues. I think the problem was that in France that publishers are starting to get some money. They managed to get it to happen, and that set precedent. Anyway, we'll see. I'm glad I'm not Google shaking this out, but then again, they can afford to.
They can, if anybody can.
Yeah. Before we get into this list here, let's talk about DuckDuckGo. This is kind of interesting. I saw this everywhere last week.
Yeah.
So apparently they've surpassed 100 million searches in a single day. Now, anyone who doesn't know about DuckDuckGo, I can't blame you. It's very niche. It's essentially search with full privacy. I don't think they collect anything about your traffic or your activity. I don't know how much they track. I've never really dug in, at least not since they launched years ago. But a lot of people feel that this is because of all the snooping that's been going on lately. You know, people, more and more people are becoming aware of just how much is being tracked. And I think DuckDuckGo is appealing to many more people than it did before.
It's definitely interesting. I want to know more about the people using it because, like, I've certainly used it from time to time, but more as an experiment just to see what things look like. I certainly don't, you know, Google my local pizza place using there we go. I said Google in the whole. I don't search for my local pizza place using DuckDuckGo. And I do people really do that? Obviously, some people do. But they were saying that, you know, just for comparison, Google serves around 5 billion searches a day. So around 50 fold, unless I did my math wrong just now. And DuckDuckGo is, they're looking at in about 5 years, they'll reach about 1 billion searches per day if they keep the same exponential growth rate that they've got going on right now, which is a lot. I mean, that's a big number. Can they really compete with Google on that level? I guess we'll find out.
And again, do they need to? They just need to take a big chunk of market share and make some money off it.
Oh yeah, they definitely don't need to dethrone Google, but it's interesting to see where that might go. If you asked me 10 years ago or wherever, when we first heard the name DuckDuckGo, I would have just laughed and said they'll be gone in a year. Yeah. And, you know, they're hanging on and growing. So
it's the ones that you surprise you. Like, is this what?
and yet Yahoo couldn't make a go of it. I guess they still exist. But when was the last time you used Yahoo?
A long time. Although I had someone talk to me the other day about Yahoo. So I guess people are still using it. I think it's mostly for their email. And then they get sucked into different areas. I don't know.
I could see that.
All right. Well, let's jump into something else that's kind of cool here. It's Moz released a 21 SEO tips for 2021. How class. Like, love it. 21. Okay. So this is by Cyrus Shepherd. Cyrus, I guess is how you say it. Anyway, Cyrus, one of the top guys there at Moz. And he But we're just going to go through the 21 tips. And some of these are obvious. Some of them are perhaps things you haven't heard of before, so you might be helpful. First one is, he suggests, is favicon optimization. So F-A-V-I-C-O-N optimization. Now, first, favicons are what you see in search results or in your browser. So I guess the most common place is your browser. If you look in your URL field when you're on a page, that's the place where you type in your address and go to it, not the search bar, but an actual URL field in the browser. You'll see often a padlock. If there is, however, a logo or something, sometimes you'll see that there. I think these days, mostly the padlock shows up. However, if there's a search result, the logo can appear, and it's a favorite icon, fave icon. So that if you save or bookmark the page, it'll show, that icon will show up in your bookmarks. It's the way to easily find things, but it does make you stand out a bit in search results. So he suggests that. Why don't we trade off? You do the next one.
Sure. So breadcrumb optimization. You see a lot of sites that don't have breadcrumbs implemented. And, you know, if you've got a really small site, sure, you don't necessarily need it. But for any larger sites, I mean, they're huge for usability quite often.
Oh, what are they?
Sorry, those are the link. Usually it'll be under that main header navigation on a site. It'll be a series of links separated by like a little greater than or a vertical bar or colon or however you want to do it, with links back to everywhere you've been on the site. So it'll usually say home and then your category and then the subcategory and then maybe the page you're on. It kind of depends on what the site is itself, but certainly
that's why they call useful. Breadcrumbs. It's like a breadcrumb trail from where you started. Right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly that. Anyway, so it's good. Have them, do it. And mark them up with structured markup. And often those breadcrumbs will even appear in search. Maybe not often, but sometimes.
So, I see it quite often.
Yeah, so do yourself a favor and just have them.
I mean, I see it all the time that it's not there. I don't remember whether or not, that'd be interesting. I'm going to keep an eye out for this, whether or not the breadcrumb still appears in Google search. I mean, Google's smart enough to know where you're at. So it's quite possible it would still show up. But I imagine it increases the likelihood of that showing up in search much, much more. All right. Number three, meta descriptions. Now, these have no bearing on whether or not your site gets ranked. This is not SEO from that perspective. It's more from conversions. A meta description is your way to describe what the page is about and entice a person to click on your listing versus another listing that, or a search result versus another search result. So make it enticing. Don't make it long. Kind of tricky to do, you know, if you get in the swing of it pretty quickly, but if you aren't good at making something kind of catchy, it can take a little time to get into it. Anyway, compel those users to click with a good meta description. What's number four?
Yeah, the next one is numbers and titles, which isn't really something I've considered a lot of in the past, but certainly use when it makes sense to do so. In the article, he basically says numbers in terms of dates, like January 2021, tends to be a pretty good attractor of clicks. The same thing kind of goes with lists. If you have like the 10 top reasons to whatever, have the 10 as a 10 as opposed to T-E-N, even though your high school English teacher would tell you to write T-E-N for numbers under 10. So don't listen to your English teacher, listen to Google. Put the number as a number in your title tag.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
right. I never heard of that myself, but apparently having that date can help.
Yes. And actually, even having numbers would be useful because title tags, you know, you're really confined by the length. You know, if you have to put like, you know, if you just put it in number format, it uses a lot less characters and pixels and you can fit more into your title.
Cool. Another thing is boilerplate titles. So anyone who uses WordPress is fairly familiar with this usually. In your settings, you can determine what you would like. Actually, Yoast is a really good example here. When you plug in Yoast, it gives you the opportunity to create a template for your title tags. You might say title of, or I don't know, name of page, category, and then site name, something like that. I'm just throwing that out there. But Cyrus said that in their testing, removing that boilerplating somewhat helped in terms of conversions, or at least, what was it? Not conversions. What did they say?
For click-throughs, I believe.
Click-throughs. Yeah, more clicks and higher rankings. I don't really understand why, but anyway.
In his example, it's interesting because his example was keyword-driven personas dash whiteboard Friday dash Moz. And when they removed the whiteboard Friday, they got a higher click-through rate, which would be counterintuitive to me.
Me too.
But, you know, I guess it just shows that that's how it goes sometimes.
Well, I think in this case, maybe that's the brand. Moz shows up faster and sooner in the title. That would make sense to me because there's a trust connected to Moz. And if they see that sooner versus the very length, that was a lengthy title before, is more likely to get that click through.
The nice thing about WordPress and probably most content management systems these days is you set that boilerplate and it's easy to override them. So for individual pages where you can make those tweaks, you know, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. And if you wanted to do something site-wide, you can. You're going back to boilerplate then, but you can still test that way too.
A perfect example of where that comes in handy is if you're dealing with tag pages or category pages, which are sometimes often blocked, but sometimes you want them indexed. And, you know, you may have a few hundred pages that aren't really there for SEO purposes, but they have to exist and you want some consistency. You don't want to write 100 titles for pages that aren't ever going to rank, but
yeah,
save yourself hours.
Number six is FAQ and how-to schema. That definitely very important schema. We love schema, period. I think it's fantastic. It adds more context to a page, clarity. In this case, he's talking about the ability for an FAQ schema. So this is what you would add to a page. If you had a frequently asked questions page, you could have the question, the answer, but then you would actually, in the code, you would note, this is the question, this is the answer. It's very simple, but it allows Google to quickly identify that it is a Q&A page, and the potential is that it'll show up in what do they call it? It's not a search snippet. It's
in the people also ask boxes. I've seen it show up there sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. In the example he has here, it's a booking.com listing the top, now the 10 best Melbourne hotels. And then below it, it has some common questions. And I guess those are sourced from the page and the FAQ schema.
For sure. And it's not that difficult to map, especially if you use just JSON LD, FAQ page, or whatever applies to your situation. It's fairly easy to mark up and worth it for sure.
Yeah. And I note someone, I can't remember who it was, someone kindly noted that, you know, we got to be careful about our acronyms. So I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to explain anything that comes up now a little more often than not. Just so you know, JSON LD, there is no acronym there that I know of. It is just a type of schema. Just type in JSON, JSON, and was it backslash LD?
I didn't know this until you were talking and I have to look it up. It stands for JavaScript Object Notation. So there you go.
Ooh.
For linked data, the LD.
Our listeners really needed that.
Yeah, I had to learn on the fly there. I had no idea. I was like, is it an acronym? I don't know.
I'm not sure I needed that.
Well, now you do.
Here you go. JSON LD. So next is relaunching top content. Number seven here. So this is true and very something that we often use when we're doing SEO on sites. So if particular content has done well in the past, and we do have to rely on the client to remember that, typically we don't have the paid time to go and research which one has, which one hasn't. But if they can think of a few that did really well, you're like, okay, is there a way to refresh this? Can we relaunch it? And if you can, that's a powerful tool. I mean, that content typically already had some authority that was built. It's usually waned over time. It doesn't have the same rankings it has, but I have experienced the ability to get them up faster in rankings again, simply because they have history. So try and relaunch some older but effective content in 2021.
And one easy way to sometimes find that content, just go into your Google Analytics account, set a date range, like maybe, check it for 2018 or 2017, pick a year, and search for your traffic by content under, I can't remember the navigational path, of course. I think it's under behavior and then content or something to that effect. Or you go to landing pages and look for ones that stand out in that year as having a lot of entry traffic. It might help identify which pages could be redone. And then if you see them tailing off, you know, that might be a good one to relaunch.
Mm-hmm. What's next here?
Increase internal linking.
Love that one.
You know, a lot of people don't link internally within their blog posts and their content to other relevant content. And you should, for a lot of different reasons. It helps pass authority through your site. It helps pass relevance from one page to the next. User experience is good. So if you've got a blog post and you're talking about, I hate to go back to the widget analogy from 15 years ago, but if you're talking about red widgets in a blog post, link from that blog post to your product page on red widgets or more information, supporting information about it. It just really helps keep things tidy and SEO friendly. Well,
and a huge part of that right now. This is the new SEO doesn't really need to understand this, but it is helpful. And that is that by doing these connections, you're connecting and making it clear what the topics are in your site. Entities are what Google calls them, or at least that's what we know them as. So, and this is a huge part of the knowledge graph. This is part of what Google uses to identify the content on your site and what you should rank for. So by strengthening the connections between these particular topics and or / entities, the better off you're going to be in terms of visibility. So big stuff. And again, it's one of those things that when we're brought on, we get on top of. It's important. All right. Number 9, update old content with new links. Oh, yes. So this is particularly true with sites that have been around a long, long time. I shudder at them, how many broken links we have on our site because we have had a lot of years of news on our website. And well, you know, the internet, things change a lot. So companies go down, get changed, get bought, whatever, and those links break. So you go through and fix those. But, you know, if there's an opportunity to link them to something just as relevant but active, do it. It does help. And it sort of refreshes that old content as well.
Absolutely. And I would note as well that those links could be internal as well as external. So if you've got a new product page or new information on your own website, mm-hmm. your old supporting blog post might be beneficial to add those links.
Yeah, and actually this might as well just do this 10th here too. It connects with number 10, which is removing unnecessary links. You know, if there's any garbage in there, just remove them. If there's links in your site that that really aren't necessary, remove them. And it just helps to declutter the site and stop the bleed of your authority to places that are just not worthwhile. With that said, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to get into number 11, mobile link parity audit. Chew on that one for a sec. Mobile link parity audit. Anyway, we'll be right back.
SEO 101 will be back right after recess.
Here's the truth you need to know about podcasting. The biggest problem you face right now as a future podcaster is the myth that it takes an enormous amount of time or effort to produce a high-quality professional podcast. Luckily for you, there's a solution to your problem. If you're an online marketer who really needs to grow an audience of buyers but can't do all the heavy lifting alone, then here's the solution you're looking for. Introducing the DFY Podcasting System. Here's what you get. 30 minutes of one-on-one training. a weekly podcast for you or your company, distribution to almost every podcast portal, an embeddable player for your website, an ebook called How to Podcast, created for WMR.FM show hosts, and much, much more. And best of all, you'll start seeing results with the DFY podcast system within a couple of weeks. You're just one podcast away from growing brand awareness and engagement in your business. Log on to podcast.wmr.fm and sign up for a deeply discounted rate today. That's podcast.wmr.fm.
Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs send you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let TopSEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Okay, class, take your seats and no talking. Recess is over and SEO 101 is back in session, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Welcome back to SEO 101 on WebmasterRadio.fm, hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, Inc., and my company senior SEO, Scott Van Ack. Remember, we have a show notes newsletter you can sign up for at SEO 101 Radio. Don't miss a single link and refresh your memory of a past show at any time. And we have full-on show notes now, so or actual transcription, I should say. So you've got lots there. In addition, I'm inviting listeners to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can connect with me via LinkedIn at, this is the URL, linkedin.com/IN/website marketer. That's what I've chosen my nickname to be back then instead of Ross Dunn, which I question sometimes. But anyway, website marketer is my name within LinkedIn. And so linkedin.com/IN/website marketer. All right. We're doing the 21 smart Google SEO tips for 2021. This is by Cyrus Shepherd from Moz. Number 11. Why don't you take that one, Scotty?
Yeah, the mobile link parity audit. You knew that was coming. anyways, what happens is a lot of people will switch from a desktop site and they'll redesign and make a mobile site and they will pull links. So you'll have fewer links pointing to various pages of your site. Maybe your header navigation is reduced, or maybe drop-down navigation is reduced. And you really should not do that. What'll happen is you may end up removing links, and then that content can't really be easily found via mobile. I think this issue probably isn't that big of a deal if you are working, say, in WordPress or a content management system to create a properly responsive website. But you know, be careful with your navigation. If you are creating two sites, you're designing for mobile on one, and it's quite a bit different than the desktop version, try to make sure you're including all the same links to your content.
Yeah, and this is why when we do design at Stepforth, we design mobile first. Just like Google, Google is mobile first, so design mobile first, desktop second. That way, whatever's on desktop is sure to be on mobile, because the mobile was the place that established everything. Unfortunately, there's just oftentimes when desktop sites are converted to mobile, things get removed to make it more slipstream, make it look better. You end up with some, with a lack of links. And essentially you can deconstruct the connections, that those entities that we're talking about, those connections between pages. And that's not good. Doesn't help. And since Google is becoming mobile only in 2021, this is going to be absolutely critical. Invest in long form content, number 12. So the actual length of content is not a ranking factor. Even Cyrus says that here. It does often earn more links and shares simply because it's more in depth in most cases. That's why I like writing, or suggest clients write, ultimate articles. These are the kind of things that are just outstanding. outstanding. They deserve shares. They attract links. They're just the kind of thing that people want to talk about, want to read, and want to share. They typically do well for that particular reason in results. What's number 13?
13 kind of ties right into that. When you are creating that long form content, make sure you use a lot of header tags. So, you know, you'll have your main H1 at the top of the page and then subsequent H2 and H3 tags as you organize your content throughout that long form. You can use multiple H1s on a page, but in most cases, you probably don't want to. And it just sort of helps Google organize that page and see what every section is about, which is probably going to be extra helpful the way Google is, what's the word I'm looking for? They're going to start linking to subsets of content within the page. Right. You know what I'm talking about, right? I'm looking for the word. It's escaping me. I'll figure it out. Passages.
Yes, passages. Right. Thank you.
Got it. Just in time.
Yes, we certainly talked about that enough. It has not launched yet that I know of. We're all waiting.
It has not. But yeah, those heading tags I'm suspecting will be helpful in that long form content as well for the passage stuff once that's released.
All right. And further to sort of the entity concept, number 14 is leveraging topic clusters. If you're going to create a piece of content that's outstanding, it helps to have supplementary content, things that help, you know, they establish, maybe do a series about a particular topic. All of these reinforce each other and give a better opportunity for visibility. Of course, that's through internal linking again. And number 15?
I guess it doesn't really tie in exactly, but bringing content out of tabs. If you have a lot of content in accordions and dropdowns, they have to click to reveal. I guess studies are showing to bring them out of those tabs so people don't have to click to see them, which is kind of interesting because I know Google is, you know, pushing for mobile friendly, and there are a lot of very friendly mobile reasons why to have that content in a tab so you don't have this mess on your phone. But so it's not necessarily an indexing issue, probably more of a usability issue more than anything. I know personally, I don't love tabs sometimes. I think a lot of people use them wrong. You know, in my case, I don't like it if I'm looking up a product and I've got to have a different tab for all the little details about every type of thing, like the warranty is in a tab and maybe the specifications are in a tab and the description's in a tab. It's not always easy to find depending on what the designer's done. So leaving that content out of the tab might make it easier for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I'm personally a fan of accordions. Oftentimes they look good. Accordion design. For listeners, that's when you click on something and it drops down, and then you click on the one below it, it goes back up and the other one drops down. I mean, it's just a clean way of quickly getting through content, but I can see why it's not everyone's cup of tea. And yeah, it's, I guess, just not as effective either for user experience. I'm going to take a quick second here and mention that we've got a couple exciting shows coming up. This is episode 398. Well, for 399, we have Stefan Spencer. One of my mentors, great guy, and always has lots to share. He's got his own two podcasts that are great to listen to, and he'll be sure to be very interesting. For our 400th episode, I am just in the midst of getting the actual timing worked out, but we're going to have John Mueller on the show from Google. So I invite you all to send in any questions you have through our Facebook page. So you can just send it through the group, our Facebook group, or post it on our Facebook page, SEO 101. So that's going to be quite exciting. All right, the next bit here, technical SEO, number 16, Core Web Vitals. This is very technical, but it is part of the page experience signals that are going to be part of, you know, what Google is using as a ranking factor in 2021. I've been researching this a lot lately, trying to find different ways of building websites that have a lot of these Core Web Vitals built in. It is not going to be easy. There's going to be a big, big, big market for that this year. I expect there'll be some startups, in fact, that are going to be focused entirely on this, especially in the page builder realm of WordPress. There's a lot of work to be done there because the code tends to be quite bloated. In any case, they are very technical. This is about how to provide a better experience on your website, making sure the page loads quickly, making sure that content doesn't move around as you load the page. Oh, I hate that. Lots of things are going to be considered. We talked about it in the previous episode. And there's plenty of information online. Just type in Core Web Vitals and you'll find out a lot. It will be rather Greekish if you're not into this stuff, but there are some good, decent explanations that are sort of lower level if you don't want to get into the weeds.
Yeah, the next is limiting your XML sitemaps to 10,000 URLs, which is something I've never heard anyone talk about before. It kind of surprised me. The kind of the upper limit in an XML sitemap is 50,000 URLs, and then you break those. So you have an index sitemap typically, and then that index sitemap, XML sitemap, will point to a bunch of other sitemaps, and each of those have a subset of URLs based on whatever criteria works for your site. Anyways, the upper limit has sort of been 50,000, but as Cyrus says that, you know, you don't have to limit yourself at that. You can make your own limit of 10,000, make it smaller. And I guess they've seen some tests where indexing has been better for those larger sites when they break the sitemaps into smaller subsets, which is, I've never thought about that.
There was a time when we talked, gosh, I got into the weeds on this years ago, but where you could build out sitemaps for specific, you would do it just per category or just per silo. It just didn't seem worthwhile anymore. Google is far smarter than that. It doesn't need that anymore. I'm surprised this makes a big difference, honestly. I think it probably does simply because you can break it down into the more important parts versus if you did 50,000, it's hard to prioritize really well, even though there is a priority setting. I imagine it is better if it's a little bit broken into different files. Kind of intriguing though. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, XML sitemaps are a coded map of your website, I guess, in terms of links. So all the different pages within your website are in a sitemap. You've seen the visual versions of these. Well, this is an XML version. It's a simple coded file that Google can digest quickly and access all the pages you want them to see. It doesn't mean they're going to index them all. It'll crawl them most likely, but it doesn't mean it'll add it to their index. That's a whole nother thing. Leverage dynamic sitemaps. This is unnecessarily complex, I think, for our listeners, but and frankly, I don't think I've seen someone use this. Have you seen a dynamic sitemap? I have.
Never. I've never seen one.
Essentially, I'll read it off here if you want to know. He said his friend Oliver Mason shows that a dynamic sitemap is a sitemap that changes based on what you want Google to crawl. So if you have a large corpus of URLs that you want Google to crawl, put the high priority ones in their own special sitemap. And I think this breaks down to what we were just talking about, having them in separate maps. I think it just might be a little more in depth because it uses different technology. It's going to be way above our listeners. And hell, I don't even use them and I never used them. So maybe it'll come out someday that it's important, but at this point, I imagine there's many more things you should work on. And we're into link building.
Oh, look at that. Passive link acquisition. So the gist of passive link acquisition is trying to build links to your site without having to do anything. So you have to do a lot, but you're not going out there and knocking on doors and calling and emailing, hey, will you link to my stuff? The gist of it is build really good content. Build content that when people see it, they want to link to it. And how to do that really is going to vary based on industry to industry and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the more advanced or not advanced, but the more in depth your content can be, the more interesting, the more engaging, including mixed media, maybe some video, some graphs, some photos, whatever. Mm-hmm. Just make really high quality content that people want to share and link to. And you'll grow your links. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And link attraction is the other term for it we use all the time. So same idea, just build it and they will come. It's the old saying. Although I'm not so sure in this case and all the time, but you need to definitely get it out there.
and you know, I'll find like, you know, you might get a link a year or something. And I know that doesn't sound like much, but if you've got a site that's going on and on and on for years and you're building content all the time, they add up and they translate into traffic and they help your rankings. And
yeah, it's and not worth all links it. Are created equal. Some are very powerful. Some
absolutely.
Are so you may get the powerful one that, I don't know, if you try to equate them to other, maybe worth 1,000 links, garbage or low level links. It's quite important.
And that doesn't, you can't forget too, when you're creating this content to attract links, you're also creating more authority and more content to rank. So it's not like you're creating it just for links, but it's a good offshoot. Mm-hmm.
Number 20 is page level link intersect. Page level link intersect. Okay, so this is, I have a feeling, a bit of a pitch for Moz, and that's okay. It's a really clever tool. The idea here is that you put in your URL, the one you want to get links from, or links to, I should say. So you're trying to build links to xyz.html. Well, you then use this tool and go, okay, please show me pages that link to any combination of the following URLs. And then you would put in, I don't know, another website that talks about XYZ. And then you put a Wikipedia page that talks about XYZ. And then what it'll do is it'll, Moz will go through its system and look for any places where there are links to both of those page, both of those sites, in those cases pages, and not to yours. And then you can identify them and go, okay, well, these are obviously very relevant. These are ones I want to target and try to build links to. And I'll take a quick one. The last one here, be the last click. It just essentially makes sure you've got the best content, make sure you get the best experience. And that's going to be what really gets everything. I can't speak. Essentially, you want to be the one that everyone wants to be at, the site they want to be at. This is where they don't have to go anywhere else. Goodness gracious, that was a lot of words for that answer.
Keep your users happy. Help them find what they want. Yeah. It all comes down to user experience.
There you go. Well, that took a lot longer than I expected. I'd like to just add one more thing to the show. This is kind of a cool little tool we found. I was looking through some of the articles on local search forum, and there is a tool for checking or changing your location when you're doing searches. It's a Chrome tool called GS Location Changer. This is on Chrome. It's also available on Firefox. It is free. GS Location Changer. So if you do a search for that, you'll find it. And it allows you to change your location so that your search results will hopefully connect with that, and you can see what results appear in different places. Now, Scott had a bit of an issue with his. Why don't you share that?
Yeah, so I'd never heard of this tool until we're getting ready to start recording this episode. And so I installed the extension and did a search, put in Comox, BC, which is the city I live in, and just tried searching for pizza. And it brought up pizza restaurants in some city in Kansas, or some area of Kansas. So Kansas City. Anyway, I can't speak either. I'm getting my brain mixed up. Anyway, so it might have some glitches. Maybe I set it up wrong, although there's not really any setup. I'm going to have to figure that one out, but make sure that it's showing the city you want it to show and not Kansas by default. Maybe that's just where it wants people to go.
Yeah, let's hope that was just a glitch. Okay, well, remember, we've got some fantastic episodes coming up. I'm going to be working my butt off to get some even more great attendees, guests over 2021. I know I promised before, but I think I've been delivering lately. We've had some good episodes, and thank you for joining us today too, Scott. Much appreciated.
Absolutely.
So on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company senior SEO, Scott Van Ack, thank you for joining us today. If you have any questions you'd like to share with us, again, for John Mueller, that'd be great. Please feel free to post them on our Facebook group, easily found by searching SEO 101 Podcast on Facebook. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, every Monday on webmasterradio.fm.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.